Good evening, Chairperson.
Evening. Allow me to welcome all of you to this meeting. Honorable members, Deputy Minister, members of the Department of Health. I'm not certain if the Minister is present. I know that he's been very busy. If he is, also very good welcome to him. All the presenters and the scientists, the members of the media, officials of Parliament, all others present in this meeting. This briefing has been called for a very special purpose, and that purpose is to receive a briefing from the
Chair, you're on mute.
And the Ministry. To receive a briefing from the Department and the Ministry on the new variant, the Omicron variant, and other related matters. Ms. Machalamba, can you just tell me who is in attendance on our side?
Good evening and thank you, Chair. Present is Dr. Jacobs, Ms. Gela, Mr. Sokacha, Mr. Siwela, Ms. Wilson, Ms. Ishmael, Dr. Thembe Kwayo, Ms. Lengwa, Mr. Van Staden, and Ms. Sugers. I've received apologies from Ms. Chirwa and Mr. Imam Sheikh. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Also in attendance, as I said earlier, we have representatives from the Ministry and from the Department of Health. I will hand over to the Minister or the Deputy Minister who is present. Just to acknowledge their presence and the Department, and then we will continue.
Good evening, Honorable Chairperson, and good evening to all the members, Honorable members, and to the media and the staff. We do have the Minister requesting to be actually excused, as it is where the World AIDS Day, so he is still driving back from Tikundu, which is far-flung rural part of Limpopo, and he would definitely have a connectivity challenges. We would want to indicate that we are here led by the department, the DG, Dr. Buthelezi. Let me then also make this announcement about Dr. Buthelezi, that Dr. Buthelezi was on leave, a special leave that was actually given to us by the presidency, because there were certain things that they wanted to check and follow up on. We since received an information from the president on Sunday, and therefore Dr. Buthelezi came back on Monday that he had been cleared on issues that they were actually checking on him with him. And we are happy to have him back. And he is here now leading the delegation of our officials. Maybe when the time comes in, when we are requested to introduce the rest of the other members who are here as DDGs, and also some of the researchers, scientists here, that opportunity will take it at the time that is appropriate from your Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister Dlomo. Honorable members, before we proceed, I'd like to remind you that this virtual meeting is deemed to be the precinct of Parliament and therefore constitutes a meeting of a committee of the National Assembly for official purposes only. In addition to the rules of virtual sittings, the rules of the National Assembly, including the rules of debate, apply. Members enjoy the same powers and privileges that apply in a sitting of the National Assembly. Members should equally note that anything said in the virtual platform is deemed to have been sent to the House and may be ruled upon. All members who have logged in shall be considered to be present and are requested to mute their microphones and only unmute when recognized to speak. This is because the microphones are very sensitive and will pick up noise which might disturb the attention of other members. When recognized to speak, please unmute your microphone and connect your video. Members may make use of the icons on the bar at the bottom of their screens, which has an option that allows a member to put up his or her hand to raise points of order. The Secretariat will assist in alerting the chairperson to members requesting to speak. When using the virtual system, members are urged to refrain or desist from unnecessary points of order. With that having said, Deputy Minister, let me again welcome you and the team from the National Department of Health. We were all in South Africa quite shocked when we heard of the announcement of this new variant and the 32 mutations which are found on this new variant, if I understand it correctly, 30 of those on the spike protein of this virus. And therefore, there are certain challenges with regards to this virus and, of course, with regards to the expected health outcome of our people. So we are really looking forward to hearing from yourselves about this new variant and the importance of this to our people in South Africa, and also for us to be able to alert our people that there is a potential of a fourth wave and of infection. And therefore, it is important that everyone would listen to the advice which would be given here tonight, and that this advice, of course, is important to all people of South Africa. With that having been said, Deputy Minister, I welcome you to introduce the rest of the team and the DG, etc., and those who will be presenting on behalf of the Ministry and the Department of Health. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you very much once more, Honorable Chair, for inviting us to come in and give you an update on what actually is the process of this Omicron variant. One, in a simple language, we are actually informed by the scientists who are going to start presenting now. I always like to make it simple for my own ordinary people, wherever we come from, that this virus is planning to actually escape all other measures that we are putting in place to get it to be eliminated. So among other things it does is to change its shape and form in an area that is called mutation. It's nothing new, it's something that we always see and get from certain such organisms. What also is not alarming is that our scientists will indicate that we were expecting a mutation. It's just that we didn't know the date and time. We actually are we commend the leadership of Dr. Blade Nzimande, Minister of Higher Education, for hosting and having within that department a genomic surveillance team. Researchers in our country are doing a wonderful work and therefore came up with this variant, a new variant, and reported it, rightfully so, to the World Health Organization as it would be expected. We were greatly alarmed by the response of various big countries at this, and
have we lost you, Deputy Minister? Deputy Minister?
Now saying we don't know whether that would work because many other countries now do have the virus. However, in this explanation, we are taking comfort from what the researchers are saying, that it being a twin brother sister to the already viruses that are there will not completely escape the vaccine and be completely immune from the measures that we put in place. So at the end of it all, we would still wish that we all collectively advocate and ask people to accelerate being vaccinated. Also guided by science that if you are vaccinated, you do not necessarily escape getting an infection or being reinfected, but you escape getting the severe infection that will take you to ICU or death. So there is that still that we have in us. And the scientists would probably also indicate that it is still early days to indicate the virulence or how actually dangerous this virus is. But maybe they would be saying on Monday, they still need some days and weeks to indicate. Maybe they have a bit of a day or two now after they briefed the minister on Monday. I would now ask our Director General, Dr. Buthelezi, who would know better how they are lined up, the presenters, and therefore maybe he would probably indicate whether we are going to listen to 1, 2, 3, and then only then Chairperson will bring the meeting to yourself after we have listened to some presentation that Dr. Mthezi will indicate how many. Thank you very much, Chairperson. If you do allow, let me then invite Dr. Mthezi to take us through what will be unfolding shortly. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Deputy Minister Dinangwe, and good evening to the Chair, Dr. Jacobs, Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee, my colleagues, and our expert scientists that are going to help us this evening. With your indulgence, Chair, I would like to quickly introduce who is in our delegation that is led by our Deputy Minister. We have Dr. Nicholas Crisp, who's the Deputy Director General for National Health Insurance. We've got Valerie Rainey, who's our Deputy Director General for Corporate Services. We have Dr. Makanya, who's our Chief Nursing Officer and our Acting Deputy Director General for HRD. We've got Dr. Zugi Pinini, who's our Acting Deputy Director General for HIV, TB, STIs. We've got Dr. Kwaina Tulare, who works very close on health economics and NHI with Dr. Chris. We have the team that is working in the ministry led by the Chief of Staff, Dr. Siziba. And then we've got Mr. Joe Hatla, who's our PLO with his Deputy Lumi. And then we also have Mr. Zondif and Kawerazi from the Office of the Deputy Minister. We have Mr. Ravin Naidu, who's currently chairing our IMT and is responsible for emergency medical services in the department. We've got Ms. Ayanda Ngubo, who's the head of the Office of the DG. And then our special guest who will lead us today in terms of the presentations. And with your indulgence, Chair, we will have two presentations. We'll have a presentation from Professor Richard Lessels from CRISP. There's a team that is doing the genomic sequencing. He will take us through just the variant and the implications of that. After that, we'll then have Dr. Michelle Groom from the National Institute of Communicable Diseases, who will then take us through the epidemiology on where we are. We're getting to the fourth wave and then telling us what's happening in different provinces. So that's a team, unless I hope I haven't missed anyone, that's a team that we have. And with your indulgence, Chair, maybe I will hand back to the Deputy Minister, but Dr. Richard Lessels will do the first presentation, then followed by Dr. Michelle Groom. Thank you very much, Honorable Deputy Minister.
With your permission, Chairperson, if we can then just start with the two presenters, and not have any issues for now from my side. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
You're very welcome. Let me also welcome the expert scientists, Dr. Richard Lessels, Dr. Michelle Groom, to the Portfolio Committee on Health of National Parliament. And we're looking forward to your presentations. You may continue.
Good evening, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, Deputy Minister, DG and DDGs, and other officials and colleagues. It's very nice to be with you this evening and to, as you say, give you an update on where we are with the Omicron variant. And first of all, I'd just like to send apologies from my good friend and colleague, Professor Tulio de Oliveira, who you may have been expecting to see. He's been packing up his house in Durban today because his move to Stellenbosch is actually tomorrow. So he unfortunately couldn't be with you this evening, but he sends his apologies. What I'm just going to briefly present to you is just this overview and a walkthrough of what was detected, what this Omicron variant is, and just some of what we understand about it now, and highlight some of the uncertainties that we still have at the moment and the work that we're doing to fill in those uncertainties and to get more understanding of this variant. And the first thing to say is that this is the work of many, many people, and the detection of the variant is from a network of genomic surveillance, the Network for Genomic Surveillance South Africa. And this was thanks to investment by the Department of Science and Innovation and the South African Medical Research Council right at the beginning of the pandemic back in February, March last year, because they had the foresight to understand how genomic surveillance and genomic sequencing was going to be a key component of the public health response and the pandemic preparedness for this pathogen. And that's because we've unfortunately built up a lot of expertise about infectious diseases and how pathogens spread. And as the Deputy Minister said, how these viruses can evolve over time. And so we knew that tracking this virus and tracking the evolution of this virus was going to be critical. And so what you always hear when you hear about these new variants is the work of many, many people in lots of different laboratories around the country. So the network consists of the National Institute for Communicable Diseases and several academic sequencing labs in some of the universities around the country. And then each of those sequencing labs is linked to the diagnostic testing labs, both the public, the NHLS, and the private testing labs that do the PCR testing for diagnosing this virus infection. And so this network is truly a collaborative network. And actually the detection of this variant was thanks to the work of one of the private laboratories, Lancet Laboratories, and having a very close link to the National Institute for Communicable Diseases. And I'll explain a little bit more about that in a few slides time. So just to summarize what I'm going to show you here, you're now all familiar that this is a new variant, and it was given this Greek name Omicron by the World Health Organization on Friday. And it also has this technical name that's more for us scientists to kind of understand and use, and that's B.1.1.529. One of the problems with doing these presentations is by the time you present it, it's out of date, and you have to be updating these things now three or four times a day. So this is the presentation I submitted to you at lunchtime. And here I was saying there are now globally, there are 215 kind of genome sequences of this variant that have been shared globally. But it's now actually more than 300 just over the course of today. The earliest sample was collected on the 8th of November. And again, here I say there were 128 of these genomes were from South Africa. That's now over 200. And as well as Gauteng, KZN, and Western Cape, we've now detected it in Eastern Cape and Mpumalanga as well. You'll be familiar that this has now been detected in multiple other locations around the world. And what we expect to see over the next few days is that just increase and it to be detected in most corners of the globe again. We also, and I'll explain why, there are signs from the diagnostic PCR testing that this variant is likely to be present in all the provinces and to be increasing in all the provinces. And as the chair said, we know something about this variant from the predictions we can make about the mutations that we see in the genetic code, but we don't know how that translates to how the virus behaves in the real world. And we need to do a lot more work as scientists, as public health professionals, as doctors, and to really understand how this virus behaves and what the impact of that is for our public health control. And one of the key things, as the Deputy Minister highlighted, was that we're in a different place this year with the Omicron variant than we were last year around this same time with the Beta variant, because we now have vaccines. And vaccines remain the critical tool to prevent severe disease, hospitalization, and death. Now, I will just skip over this quite quickly because Dr. Grimm may present in more detail the epidemiology and what we're seeing at the moment. But as was said, you know that now we're seeing this rapid increase in cases again, which, although it started in Gauteng, is now also happening in the other provinces. And it's come off a very low base that we had got down to this period when we had very low case numbers, low proportion of PCR tests that were coming up positive. But unfortunately, we didn't have much respite, and now we're seeing this rapid increase in cases again. If you look just at some of these markers that we look at to understand where we are in different parts of the country, this is just looking at Gauteng province and the different municipalities in Gauteng. And what I just want you to get here is that in each of these districts, you're seeing this orange color, which means there's a sustained increase in cases. And you'll see that for some of these, it's getting close to the red line, which would indicate a new wave. So unfortunately, at this stage we are at the moment, and looking at the trajectory, it's very likely that we are now in the very early stages of the fourth wave. And now here, what I'm showing you is just that although this is most advanced in Gauteng, you're now starting to see the sustained increase in most of the other provinces. You can just see the orange coming in Eastern Cape, in KwaZulu-Natal, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Northwest, and Western Cape. So although Gauteng is ahead of all the other provinces, we're starting to see the same pattern across the different provinces. And again, although it's very early at the moment, you're just starting to see an upturn in hospital admissions, which is largely at the moment in Gauteng province. And again, that's very early after a period when we had very low numbers of cases in hospitals. So as the chair said, this is the Omicron variant when we look at the genetic code. And this is not to go into detail about the genetic code and the different mutations. It's just to highlight to you that it's not just the number of mutations that worry us when we look at these variants and the genetic code, but it's where those mutations are concentrated. And one of the things here is that, again, many of the mutations are concentrated in the spike protein. This is this whole green area here. And each of these is showing you one of the mutations in the genetic code. And we see that they're concentrated in key parts of this spike protein, which are important for the virus latching on to our cells inside our body, and also for the antibodies that neutralize the virus. These sites are important for those antibodies to bind to and stop the virus getting into our cells. So that's why we get concerned when we see a large number of mutations in some of these key parts of the virus. One of the things we can tell because of the skilled people we have in the network who can analyze these genetic patterns is we could show that this was very different, a very different virus to the Delta or the Beta variant. The genetic code, although there were some similarities, it was overall very different, and it wasn't a descendant of those viruses. So by that, I just mean it hadn't evolved in a stepwise fashion from the Delta variant. And as I said, some of these mutations we already know quite a lot about because we've seen them before. So just for example, one you'll remember from this time last year was the N501Y mutation. And that was one of the characteristic mutations in the Beta variant. And you might remember that was initially called the 501Y V2. And so we know something about some of these mutations, but what we don't know is what all these mutations together in combination do to the behavior of this virus. One of the things I highlighted, and actually one of the reasons that this variant was again picked up quite early here in South Africa, was that one of the PCR tests that we use here in the NHLS and in some of the private laboratories can flag a sample as having one of these genetic mutations. And it's just a peculiarity of where the mutation is in the genetic code. That means one of the signals on the PCR test is negative, whereas the two other signals, because most PCR tests, they have three targets or three signals. The other two still flag positive, so the test is still reported as positive, but you see that there's something different about it. The spike gene is not detected. And Lancet laboratories in Gauteng noticed that as they were starting to see more positive cases in November, they noticed that some of them had this marker, this S gene dropout. And they were curious about that because that S gene dropout doesn't happen in the Delta variant. And the Delta variant we knew was causing most of the infections. And so they connected to the NICD and they sent samples to the NICD to sequence. They also sequenced them in their own labs. And at around the same time, they then got these genome sequences and could clearly see that this was something different and something that needed attention. So the other thing about this PCR marker is it means you can actually track this virus in real time. You don't have to wait for the whole genome sequencing, which often takes 1 or 2 weeks to do the procedures in the laboratory. So here, just with the PCR testing, you can track the variant and where you're seeing it increasing. And what you see here is just in the red is just the number of positive PCR tests in the NHLS using this test. And then in the blue line is the proportion of those tests that have this signal, this S gene dropout. And so what you see just very recently, so since kind of the early mid-November, you see suddenly the vast majority of the tests were showing this signal. So a sign that things had suddenly changed dramatically and this variant was becoming much more common in the samples that were being tested. And what we can see when we look at the NHLS data now from the different provinces and also the private laboratory data is we see this same pattern across most, if not all of the provinces, that the number and the proportion of the positive tests that are showing this signal has just shot right up. In terms of the sequencing, you'll remember I said there's now almost 200 sequences from South Africa. And what I'm showing you here is just the pattern of what we've seen with the different variants over time. So here, each block you're looking at is just a 2-week period and showing you what were the variants that were detected in that 2-week period across the country. And here what you see is this gray was kind of the first wave of our epidemic. And then there were lots of different variants or lineages causing infections. And there was no particular variant that dominated. And then around this time last year, you'll remember we saw this beta variant emerge first in the Eastern Cape and then spread to the Western Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, and then the whole country. And it caused that devastating second wave of infections that caused a lot of suffering, particularly here in KwaZulu-Natal and Eastern Cape and Western Cape. And then you'll remember that around the middle of the year, around May and June, we saw the Delta variant come in. and that came in from outside the country, but then it rapidly took over from the Beta variant and caused that devastating third wave of infections that particularly hit Gauteng province hard. And what you're seeing now is a kind of similar pattern that, although it's very early days, here in the blue, you see the Omicron variant coming in, and it kind of very rapidly takes over from the other variants and becomes dominant. This is just a similar graph, but just showing you for the different provinces where we're detecting this. And as I say, again, this is out of date because we now have some sequences from Eastern Cape and Mpumalanga that are the Omicron variant. And we're filling in all these gaps from the different provinces, and all the teams in the labs are working round the clock to get the information from the samples from other provinces as the cases start to rise. So we fully expect that we're going to find this Omicron variant in all the provinces, and it looks very likely that it's going to take over from the Delta variant that was anyway spreading at very low levels. So one thing I said to you is we have the genetic code, and we can make some predictions about what that means for the behavior of the virus. But unfortunately, we have to do the work. We have to do the research. We have to do the surveillance to understand actually what does this mean and how is this variant behaving in the population. And that means a lot of different types of studies. It means some laboratory studies that many of you will be familiar with from last year with the Beta variant. And it means lots of field studies, lots of work with the data that the NICD, the NHLS, the private laboratories collect. And the key things that we're trying to understand is how efficiently does this virus spread? Is it more transmissible than the other variants we've seen? So is it better at spreading from person to person? We need to understand, what effect does this variant have on vaccine protection? And here the key thing is to understand that although we think these mutations may have an effect on the neutralizing antibodies, we think that they will have much less effect on some of the other arms of the immune system, and particularly the T cells. And these are the cells that help to prevent severe disease and hospitalization and death. And that's why we say to you that although we think this variant may have worked out a way to get around some of the vaccine protection and to cause infection, we think it will be much less able to get around the protection against severe disease. And that's a really important thing to highlight. We are already seeing a sense in the data that we're seeing more reinfections than we've seen previously. So that means somebody who's had an infection before and is now infected again, most likely with this Omicron variant. And that's something we need to confirm with more information. But again, it fits with our understanding of what these mutations might do, that they might get around that neutralizing antibody response and be able to cause infection. But again, we expect that the protection that you have against severe disease is much more difficult for this variant to get around. In terms of South Africa, we don't expect that this will have any significant effect on the therapeutics we use, because the main therapeutic we use is the steroid drug, dexamethasone. And that's not a drug that acts on the virus. And so if the virus changes, it doesn't make any difference to how the dexamethasone works. The dexamethasone works to dampen our immune response to the virus. And so we expect that would have the same effect regardless of how the virus changes. And here, the key question really is around the disease severity that we see with this variant. And here, I just want to caution a little bit that you might have seen many reports over the last few days that that this variant only causes mild cases. And I think there we have to just be a bit cautious that it's still early in the spread of this Omicron variant. The early spread that was seen in Chuani particularly and wider Gauteng province was initially largely amongst the younger age groups who you know are in a way at much less risk of getting unwell, severely unwell and ending up in hospital. And also because many people have already been infected or have been vaccinated or both, because of what we said about how that protects against severe disease, we expect that many of the cases will initially be mild. But what concerns us is this virus and this variant spreads very efficiently through the population, then it will still be able to find those vulnerable people in the population who are unvaccinated and maybe unprotected against severe disease. And that's also what concerns us when we think about the continent more generally, where the vaccination rates are much lower than here in South Africa, where there are still many, many vulnerable people who are not protected by vaccines. The initial signs we have are that this variant does not affect the diagnostic tests that we use. So although it has this signal on one of the PCR tests, the PCR tests still detect this variant very well. And the early work suggests that the rapid antigen test that we use will also detect this variant. Now, there's more detailed work to be done here in South Africa and internationally, but that's the initial sense we get from initial evaluation of the diagnostic test. So that's a good sign that we're not going to miss this in somebody who has symptoms. So just to finish, just to summarize and put this together, the epidemiological data suggests that cases are now increasing, sustained increase in cases that was initially in Gauteng, but is now across most of the provinces. This Omicron variant we've detected now in multiple samples from multiple provinces. And when we look at this PCR signal, it suggests that this variant is already widespread across the country. We think based on what we're seeing with the genetic profile and what's happening epidemiologically, that suggests to us that Omicron is able to get around some of our immune protection to cause infection. But we suspect that the protection against severe disease and death from the vaccines should be much less effective. And that's why we say vaccination remains the critical tool to prevent severe disease and death. But because this variant can get around some of our immune protections, it also highlights how critical the other public health and social measures are to slow the spread of the virus. And that means reducing our mixing, reducing our socializing, avoiding poorly ventilated indoor spaces, crowded spaces, mask wearing, remaining at home when we have any symptoms. All these measures that we've had from the beginning of this pandemic. So I will finish there and just again highlight some of the really excellent team members in this network from all these different laboratories. This is just some of the leading scientists that lead the groups in these labs. But you'll see there's a huge number of people that are involved in the work that goes into detecting these variants. And then there's an even bigger group that goes into the work that is now going on to understand the behavior of this variant and what it means for our public health measures. So thank you, Chair. I will stop there and hand over to Dr. Groom.
Welcome, Dr. Gru.
Good evening to Honourable Chair, Deputy Ministers, Director General, Deputy Director Generals, and colleagues. I will just give an update on the epidemiology. So I'm currently the IMT EPI lead, as well as the head of the Division of Public Health Surveillance and Response at the National Institute for Communicable Diseases. So I think this really just gives a picture of South Africa at the moment. Everyone knows how we've had these three waves, with the last wave being particularly long compared to the others, and quite protracted with quite a different presentation in several of the provinces. And as Richard has mentioned, you know, we really had gone to a very, very low level in terms of our number of cases, and I'll show you as well in terms of the positivity. And I think most, you know, thought that we would have a little bit more of a respite in terms of the interwave periods. If you compare, you know, the prior two waves, these interwave periods were slightly longer. And I think the wild card in all of this has been in terms of the emergence of the new variant. So I think we're close to 3 million laboratory confirmed cases. I think really just to note that this is an underestimate of the true number of infections that we have had in South Africa. There is obviously we have, you know, some of the best, or we have the best testing on the continent, but this is still less than we're not seeing. I mean, this is not all the confirmed cases. Some are asymptomatic, and some people for whatever reason may not test. So we expect, I mean, that this number is considerably higher. I think what is concerning in terms of the epidemiology at the moment is really, so the 7-day moving average in terms of the number of cases is really a metric that we use to smooth over the case numbers that we see on a daily basis. So as you may have picked up, generally on the weekends, there's less, you know, testing centers open, there's less testing on a Saturday and Sunday. And it tends that, you know, numbers reported on a Monday and Tuesday tend to be slightly lower. And so we use the 7-day moving average to give a clearer picture of the overall average number of cases at that time. And so you can see that just 2 weeks ago, we had a 7-day moving average nationally of just over 300. In a week, this increased to just over 1,000. And we're presently sitting at just over 3,500 in terms of our moving average. And I think you can just see by the slope of the curve in terms of how there really has been an exponential increase in the number of cases and greater than what we've seen in terms of the other waves. And for today, we had just over 8,000 cases, new cases reported nationally. So I think just in terms of the provinces, we have seen this differential provincial pattern with consistently certain provinces tending to start off the wave, followed by others. So on the left, we have the case numbers. And so obviously, you know, certain provinces are more populous than others. And so this is reflected in terms of the number of cases. But you can see that Gauteng is definitely dominating the cases at this stage. The graph on the right is the incidence. And so this is the number of cases taking into account the population in each of the provinces. And so this gives us a little bit of a better indication in terms of taking size into account. And you can see in the gray, there is really Gauteng, where we've seen an increasing incidence. So in terms of our testing, so we are doing both PCR testing as well as antigen testing. The antigen testing was introduced towards the end of last year. And so the other, you know, what we also are tracking is the number of tests that are conducted, which are in these bars, as well as the percent positivity or the proportion which is positive. And this is really on a daily basis, the number of positive cases divided by the number of tests that were conducted. And so if there's not a lot of circulation, the positivity rates tend to be very low. And so from wave to wave, you can really see that the interwave positivity rates have been much lower. So compared to the first wave, compared to that period after the second wave, and we had really, really low positivity rates after the third wave. And I mean, this was at the lowest point after the second wave, where we achieved about a 4% positivity rate. You can see this relatively slow increase as we went on to the third wave. We reached a peak at around 30%, 32% nationally. This came off the wave. And we had a couple of weeks where it was really, really low at just over 1%. And then suddenly in the last 2 weeks, we've seen this rapid increase, you know, going up to 2% and then 8% in the last week. And today we had a 16.5% positivity rate. If we look at this by province in terms of the positivity rates, you can just see that 2 weeks ago, so this is the period 2 weeks ago in the lightest bar, I mean, all provinces had very, very low positivity rates. Northern Cape and Free State were still, you know, coming down from their high. They were the last provinces to exit the third wave. And you can see subsequently this massive increase in terms of the positivity rates, particularly in Gauteng, where it's jumped from under 1% in, you know, 2 weeks ago. I think today it was closer on 20%. And you see other provinces are also showing this percent increase in terms of Northwest Gauteng, Mpumalanga, Limpopo, and starting to see this in the other provinces as well. I just wanted to show you by age group. So this is the percent testing positive by age group, and this is just for the PCR test. And so you can see the gray bar is the 20 to 29-year-old, the orange 10 to 19 year olds, and the yellow, the 30 to 39 year olds. And so you can see, especially when this started taking off, it was very much limited to those very younger age groups. And this was driven, I think we first detected these clusters in Tshwane, in the Institutes of Higher Learning. And subsequently, we really have seen this big increase in those younger age groups. But I think just to note that even though it starts in the younger age groups, and this may be a function of, you know, as you know, this time of the year with the matrix ending, with, you know, universities coming to an end and the younger age group being more likely to you know, be less vigilant or be less vigilant with social distancing and more likely to congregate. I think that is where we saw that initial increase. But I think really to note that this will spread out into the other age groups, and we are starting to see that. So as the varsity students return home, as scholars, you know, return home, there is spread to the older members of their family. This is just today's figures. So just to highlight how rapidly this is changing. So just in terms of looking at Gauteng, where we had, you know, 3,000 cases yesterday, 6,000 today. And I think while this can be some variability just in terms of reporting day to day, I think the positivity rate is really concerning in terms of jumping up to 27%. And you can see the other northernmost provinces, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Northwest, also increasing significantly and starting to see these increases in the Western Cape, Free State. At this stage, Northern Cape and Eastern Cape remaining, you know, towards the lower side. As Richard had showed, you know, we do monitor the sustained increase in monitoring. We're trying to relook at these wave metrics. Unfortunately, the wave crept up on us before we, you know, were able to assess these. And definitely just to show the sustained increase and with most of the provinces showing the sustained increase. And just a word in terms of the wave definitions and you know, calling a wave. You know, I think regardless of whether, you know, it meets the technical definition, I think we really are seeing, you know, increasing cases. And I think our public health response is really not driven in terms of when we might cross some predefined, you know, wave threshold. And I think as we move, you know, I think it's less valuable to do that. And I think we really do need to be guided in terms of, you know, the epidemiological data rather than these wave definitions. I just wanted to show the overall in terms of hospitalization. So this is from the DATCOF database, which collects data from all public and private hospitals. And so we had seen also a very, very low level in hospitalizations, much lower than what was seen between in the previous two interwave periods. And now we have started to see this increase both in the public and private sectors. I think really just to note that just in terms of the pathology of COVID-19, that it will start initially with mild symptoms and that the more severe symptoms, hospitalizations and deaths do occur, there's a lag. So this usually occurs kind of 2 to 3 weeks after the initial diagnosis. And so we would need to keep monitoring this in terms of what transpires in the coming 2 weeks. At this stage, there are no signals in terms of increasing deaths, but once again, I think it is too early to make a call on that, and I won't present the death data at this stage. So I think looking by province, you can see once again the grey is increasing hospitalizations that we're starting to see in Gauteng, also seeing small admissions in Limpopo in the northwest. And also a metric we often, just to smooth out, there's sometimes delays in reporting of hospitalizations and deaths. And so we compare 14-day periods. So we compare the current 14-day period to this previous 14-day period. And so you can see in Gauteng, there's been a marked increase over the last 2 weeks. And so this is the average daily number of hospitalizations, which has increased from 18 up to 61, seeing some small, much smaller level increases in the Northwest, very, very low in Limpopo, but starting to see a change in those trends where we have seen decreasing hospitalizations in the past weeks. So in Gauteng, I think you can really see this really big increase in terms of the number of cases. This is a plot of that percent positivity. So you can, you know, the blue is very good. Sorry, it's small to see, but if it's blue, it's very, very low. And obviously, as we get towards orange and red, this means very high positivity rates. And so you can see this has started off more towards the northern side, which is Tshwane, but definitely is filtering through into the other districts. And we are seeing increases in all of the districts within Gauteng. Just looking at Gauteng in terms of, once again, that age distribution, and I think really striking, you know, that 2 weeks ago, or a couple of weeks ago, this is, you know, this a month ago, very, very low positivity rates in all of the age groups. And then we once again started off with those the 10 to 19 year olds and 20 to 29 year olds, and this rapid increase, but definitely spread as well in Gauteng as nationally into the older age groups as well. This is just, the hospitalizations in Gauteng just by district. And so you can see all of the districts increasing hospitalizations, most marked in Tshwane, as this was where we initially, you know, detected these clusters and seemed to be the start of this new wave. I'll run through the other provinces quickly. I think Northwest, we're starting to see this increase. Some of the districts, Bojanala, we've seen. And this seems to have started in, particularly in those districts which were bordering on Tshwane. And we would expect this to then filter out into the rest of the province. Starting to see increasing hospitalizations in all of the districts in Northwest. Limpopo, similarly, I think we've had very low testing rates overall throughout the pandemic in Limpopo, but also seen increases, some districts starting more than others. And once again, in these that, you know, are potentially bordering on Tshwane. Not really seeing increasing hospitalizations yet in terms of Limpopo. In Mpumalanga, also seeing this increase, increasing positivity rates, but not yet seeing the increases in hospitalizations. Western Cape, as the coastal provinces, seem to be lagging slightly behind, but starting to see those increases, not yet seeing any increases in hospitalizations in the Western Cape. KZN also kind of really in the last couple of days starting to see those increases. Once again, too early to see any signals for increasing hospitalizations. Eastern Cape, very similar pattern to the other coastal provinces. And Free State. So Free State and Northern Cape had a very, you know, different trajectory for their third wave, where they saw almost this double peak, where cases seemed to come down and had a second surge, and a very prolonged kind of third wave in Free State, and yet also starting to see those increases there. No hospitalizations yet. Northern Cape at this stage has not been seen any significant increases. We know that Northern Cape has quite a different trajectory to many of the other provinces, mainly because of the large distances between communities. But yeah, we will keep a monitor on that. So I think really just to sum up that we're seeing rapidly increasing numbers of new daily cases, the percent positivity and the testing rate, which is mostly in the younger age groups, but we're starting to see this move into the older age groups. Increases are mainly in Gauteng at the moment, initially picked up as these clusters in Tshwane, but we're seeing all districts now seeing increases. We're seeing increasing case numbers and positivity in Limpopo, Northwestern and Mpumalanga, and the other provinces in the last couple of days also starting to show increases. Some increase in hospitalizations in those provinces that started earliest with these increasing cases. And we really, as Richard has mentioned, need additional data on disease severity. I think, obviously, anecdotally, more mild cases now, but I think we're seeing disease mostly in the younger age groups, which do end up having less severe disease overall. We're also, you know, expecting that the more severe complications may not present themselves for a few weeks. And, you know, many, as Richard has described, in terms of looking at the distribution of the variants, transmissibility and possible immune escape. I think the worrying thing is really just in terms of the degree of increase and the spread at the moment that there is and the dominance, you know, in terms of Omicron taking over from Delta, that there is some advantage definitely in terms of this variant. But I think in terms of public messaging, really, regardless of the variants, we need to use the same public health measures. And I think Richard has gone through these in terms of promoting vaccination. Mask wearing has definitely been proven to limit the spread and limit transmission, social distancing and limiting large gatherings, especially over this time period amongst our young people. So I think I'll stop there. Yeah, I'm happy to take any questions if those are directed. Sorry, I'm just...
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. Our presentation ends here. We don't have anything to add now. We might come back if there's a need when Honourable Members have asked certain questions. Back to you, Honourable Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Minister, and also great thank you to the two researchers and expert scientists, Dr. Liddells and Dr. Wu, very informative presentation, which I am very thankful for, and which I think the entire people will be very grateful for. And it comes at a very good time where we need to be able to address the people of South Africa and find a way to motivate all people to go and have themselves vaccinated. So I'm very interested in a number of things which you had raised. I'm going to allow the other members of the portfolio committee to raise their questions first. And I'm going to call them in the order that they have indicated that they want to ask some questions or pose some questions to you. Firstly, is Honorable Vela, followed by Van Staden, then Tukacha, then Wilson, then Tembo Kwayo, then Sukers, Wahube, Ismail, and if Honorable Dr. Tembakwayo is cut off, she has forwarded the questions to me, and if she's not able to raise the questions, then I will raise them towards the end. So I'm going to repeat. It's Iba, Van Staden, Sukacha, Wilson, Tembakwayo, Sukers, Wahube, Ismail, and then myself. In that order, Honorable Members, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me welcome the presentation from the Department of Health. Chairperson, I've got a few questions that I want to ask regarding this new variant. The first one, how prepared is the department for this fourth wave? The other one, are all our provinces prepared, and there will be no deficiency of oxygen? I know previously in other provinces there was, but if we can just also get now, how is it? The other one, Chairperson, did the provinces submit their state of availability in terms of beds and staff? How numerous individuals who are in ICU due to this variant? The other one, Chairperson, is this variant focusing on children under 12? And youthful individually. If I can just get clarity on that, Chairperson, because I just heard that there are also children who are under 12 that also have this variant. The other one, Chairperson, is this happening in generally in the public sector in the moment? If I can just get a clarity, Chairperson, because I know in terms of vaccination, our target is from 17 to 12 years, and now this new variant, Omicron, it's also targeting children who are under 12. So thank you very much, Chairperson.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I hope you can have some indulgence with me tonight, because I think there's a lot of stuff we need to discuss and some points that I want to raise. And then I want to ask some questions also. So we'll continue. Thanks. First of all, thank you very much for the presentation which was brought to us tonight. I think we are in currently going into a difficult time, and it's good to receive this information. I'm disappointed, though, Chairperson, that the Minister cannot attend tonight. I think it is very important that he must be available. But nevertheless, we continue with our work, and the message will reach him eventually. Chairperson, with the announcement of the discovery of this variant last week in South Africa, I think there was a big concern that government will overreact on lockdown the country again. And there were and there are still no grounds in my eyes for a lockdown, as figures still shown last night, but South Africa currently have a recovery rate of 96%. And we have now 28,000 active cases across the country as we received the numbers last night. Now, I have immediately said last Friday that government must not create unnecessary panic among our citizens, and that there is still not enough information from scientists regarding Omicron to make case decisions. Now, it's in my view, if government would have taken that route to lock down the country, we would have and people are tired of lockdowns, and government must now guard against making political decisions at the expense of the economy and human well-being, because otherwise government will run into severe protests of our citizens. I was glad to see that the minister also Friday afternoon issued a statement that he said that the world is overreacting on South Africa. More than 39 countries, as you know, closed their doors in our faces to get a scapegoat for this new variant. But how the world is treating South Africa at this very moment is exactly the same way that this government was treating its citizens for the past 20 months. We must be honest with each other with regulations and unnecessary lockdowns. We welcome the fact that the higher lockdown level was not announced by the President Ramaphosa on this past Monday night, but the country simply cannot afford it due to the severe damage caused to the country's economy by the previous stringent lockdown regulations. We agree that people need to accept the fact that COVID is here to stay and that ways must be found to live with it and survive. And it's in our view, making vaccinations mandatory. And I think we must talk about this matter tonight. It's a very serious matter. It will not achieve the desired effect. On the contrary, it will only arouse opposition. A chairperson, getting vaccinated must remain one's own free choice. Under no circumstances may the state or government attempt to compel or force anyone to be vaccinated. I've said it during the meeting with the minister in August this year in this committee, and I'm saying it again tonight. Health services cannot be denied to anyone if they do not want to take the vaccinations. It will be unconstitutional. It cannot be allowed. In fact, no services of any kind, whether it's provided by the government or the private sector, may be refused or denied to anyone that have or will not take the vaccine. And I want to draw your attention again to the Honourable Deputy Minister who is here tonight, to your chairperson, and to the scientist who is here tonight. I want to draw your attention again to Section 12 and Section 27 of the South African Constitution. It says if government or any other organisation want to enforce Section 36 of a constitution to limit the constitutional rights of South Africans, then the limitation be considered to be, must be, and I quote, reasonable and justifiable in an open and democratic society based on human dignity, equality, and freedom, taking into account all relevant factors, which include the nature of a right, the importance of the purpose of a limitation, the nature and extent of a limitation, the relation between the limitation and its purpose, and less restrictive means to achieve a purpose, close quote. It's only after weighing up these factors and any other relevant factors that the court will either find that the limitation is constitutionally justifiable or not. And I also want to draw your attention to the president's speech, Honorable Chairperson and Deputy Minister, which was delivered during a family meeting on the 1st of February this year. And I quote from the president's speech from page 4, paragraph 13, which he said, but I quote, I want to be clear. Nobody will be forced to take this vaccine. Nobody will be forbidden from traveling, from enrolling at school, or from taking part in any public activity if they have not been vaccinated. Nobody will be given this vaccine against their will, nor will the vaccine be administered in secret. Any rumors to this effect are both false and dangerous, close quote. Now, the president's announcement this past Monday, Honorable Chairperson, this past Monday night, that a task team will be launched by the deputy president to investigate the enforcing of compulsory mandatory vaccinations is very concerning. And it shows that the president is actually now backtracking on his own word and promise as televised on the 1st of February this year. This is problematic. However, Chairperson and Deputy Minister, it should be or it must be so that this Portfolio Committee on Health must be and form part of this task team. It is time, Chairperson and Honorable Deputy Minister, to stop the exclusion of this Portfolio Committee and any further covered matters managed by government, the ministry or the presidency. This Portfolio Committee must be and form part of the National Command Council as well as the Ministerial Advisory Committee. We cannot be working in silos on this matter any longer. We must be allowed to exercise our oversight role as members of Parliament and of this Portfolio Committee. But I don't even want to go into what the lobby group was saying yesterday about to welcome to a move to mandatory vaccinations as published in the Sunday in the Times Life of yesterday. In this publication, this lobby group suggests that government must restrict access for unvaccinated people to hospitals, grocery stores, events, and certain government services. Do you see, Chairperson and Honourable Deputy Minister, the problems that will be created with this? I'm saying it again, violence and protest will erupt on a large scale if this route is followed. Even the president of the United States openly stated yesterday that Omicron is no different from other variants and therefore the USA have not imposed higher lockdown levels. Chairperson and Honorable Deputy Minister, I think it is important to note that the Financial Times reported this week that the chief executive officer of a pharmaceutical company, Moderna, Stephanie Banko, announced that the current COVID-19 vaccines will be much less effective against the Omicron variant. The CEO also warned that it can take months for pharmaceutical companies to manufacture and develop a new vaccine that is effective against Omicron. Yes, COVID is real. Yes, COVID must be destroyed and be removed from our lives, but we cannot have lockdowns of any kind anymore. We cannot violate anybody's constitutional right to have a choice of not being vaccinated. We cannot say to anyone that is not vaccinated that health services will be denied if they do not want to take the vaccinations. We cannot say to anyone that you will not be allowed to go and buy food or enter a store because you are not vaccinated. We cannot say to children and students that you will be stopped to go to school or university because you are not vaccinated. We cannot say to South Africans that you will be fired from your job because you are not vaccinated. Employees must not be dismissed for refusing to be vaccinated. Employers must rather take reasonable steps to accommodate these employees. A balanced Chairperson and Honorable Deputy Minister must be created to solve this matter for all South Africans. We dare not to impose such restrictions on South Africans. Vaccinations must be a free choice and will of every individual. And the rights of all South Africans must be respected and government must be careful not to start a fight or unrest among those in our communities who's vaccinated and those who's not vaccinated. Chairperson, just a following question. On the PCR test, can it please be explained to me how the variant is picked up by these PCR tests and what South Africa is doing to obtain these tests and to run the necessary tests with them? I concur with Dr. Richard Lesos, who said tonight more work is needed to fully understand this virus. Now, maybe this can be explained to me by one of the panel members here tonight, and that it is on the 1st of November, we had the local government election, and in my views, in 14 days after that, there was no cases reported due to people who got infected during election day. Today is the 1st of December. Can this please be explained to me? How is this possible? If I'm wrong, then I'm wrong on this, but please help me with this. I've been fully vaccinated, in case you were wondering. My question is, however, how effective is my vaccination that I have received against this current virus? And I think many South Africans is asking that question. My second last question is, what is your prediction as scientist for over what period of time will the world still have to live with this virus until it's completely destroyed? And my last question, Honorable Chairperson, is what is the readiness of our public health system at this stage? Is it still the same as in the level 5 lockdown of last year? Or have it improved? Even if it has improved a little, please tell me that. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Honorable Van Staden. I was wondering whether you wanted to allow the rest to raise any questions or concerns. But yes, thanks for taking all of the time. Honorable Sukacha is next.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Chair, let me really thank the department and thank our scientists, our research team, our doctors for the very good, outstanding work that they've done. We want to applaud them that they could manage to pick up this variant at a very early stage. It's good work. And once so here, South Africans can also take initiatives, because we have been too long colonized in terms of our knowledge systems, in terms of power, and in terms of being. We really want to applaud them. And as they have been presenting here, Chair, we could clearly hear that everything is based on science. And we want upfront, as a member of this portfolio committee, to condemn the manner in which the United States and other countries are treating South Africa. We have moved away from being colonized by other countries. We need to decolonize it and make sure we've got our own knowledge systems and our own research. And therefore, we want to applaud really our teams that have been working on these things. I don't have questions as much. I've got one question, but that's two comments because my questions have been answered. One was around age groups. Which age groups has been highly affected? The scientists have put clearly the age groups, the lower age, and so on. And the second one was the readiness of how the prevalence in provinces, because it started in Gauteng. That question was adequately responded to, that it's moving towards the Western Cape, KZN, and other provinces. And my own province, the Northern Cape, it's got its own dynamics. They could explain that, which I really brought. And also the issue of Comrade Keller asked the question that I wanted to ask, the readiness of the department and provinces. That's one question from my side, Chair, is the symptoms. This new variant having the same symptoms as COVID-19, or is there some new symptoms that are coming forth to show that people are affected by this variant? Chair, lastly, last comment, we must just be very careful as this portfolio committee of our roles and responsibilities. Our role stays being a oversight body and keeping government to its toes and responsible, so that we don't want to be part of government structures at the same time and jump again and be an oversight structure. So we should rather stay as this committee as our oversight role and keeping government responsible and accountable. Once more, thank you very much to the team. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. I hope the light is all right. I've had to walk outside. And thank you to the scientists for your presentation. I think some of my questions have been covered. There's just a couple of things I'd like to highlight. First of all, and we get a lot of queries on this when we're dealing with the public, is, do we have any idea what kind of incubation period we are dealing with Omicron? Now, I know that's a very difficult question to answer, but people are wary about people that they may have come into contact with, and how long it will take to show the symptoms. That's one of the issues. The other issue I have is with regards to an article that I read today that basically indicates that it is actually the vaccinations that have caused the mutations or the variants in this COVID. I'm not sure. I can't respond to that because I have, this is not my sphere of influence, and I'm not an epidemiologist, so perhaps you can give me some information on that so I know how to respond to that. And thirdly, one of my concerns is, and going through your graphs, I see there were quite a marked increase in children in the very young age groups. Now, I know we're seeing this in teenagers and younger adults as a result of the colleges, but there does seem to be a marked increase in positive tests in the 0 to 9 years old. Has something changed? Because this wasn't really the case before, or certainly wasn't highlighted before. And if you could give me any background on that, or perhaps I've misread it. I thank you so much. Thank you, Chair, and thank you for a wonderful presentation.
Honourable Tim McQuire, are you going to try to raise your questions? If not, I'm going to read the questions of Honourable Tembakwayo, and then we'll continue from there again with Honourable Sukers. She has raised three questions. She says, Omicron will take South Africa to the worst economy. What is your prediction to the impact of the variant on our struggling economy? Second question, what is your reaction to the statement that determines I'm reading as is, what is your reaction to the statement that determine if Omicron causes the same level of illness as older versions of the virus? Third question, officials around the world have moved quickly to warn of Omicron potential heightened infections and isolate travelers who may be infected with the variant. The rapid response stands in contrast to the handling of earlier variants, including Delta, which had a devastating effect. She's asking a big question, why? Honorable Sukers, you're next.
Thank you, Chairperson. I am just going to keep my video off because I'm in the Karoo and the connection is not very, very strong. Chair, my first question, Chair, is, If the scientists could expand on natural immunity and the durability of that against the new variant. And then secondly, our therapeutic response appears to be very limited. What proactive plans are in place within the Department of Health to evaluate and acquire supplies of molnupiravir and Paxlovid, and what other therapeutics are we considering? What is the percentage of the population likely to have contracted corona? I'm asking this in light of the study by Discovery that suggested that 80% of the population likely contracted coronavirus. Is there a level of herd immunity that may affect the severity of the disease? And then following on from this to the Department of Health, what are we doing to ensure that early treatment is sought when infected by the virus and drive disease control for those living with comorbidities? It is our concern, Chair, that government, contrary to the Deputy Minister's answer to my question in the House, neglected all other programs such as HIV and AIDS. And I just read an article today that again points to how we are at the forefront, yes, of HIV research and response, but that in terms of eradicating HIV/AIDS and stopping the spread of it, that we are losing that battle. So in light of that, if the department can please answer us on that. And we do have a concern that we have highlighted before, and government now has made the announcement that we are in the beginning of a fourth wave. And it is important for us to know what is the department going to do differently to ensure that we don't have again, the high levels of people dying because their diabetes or their underlying conditions are out of control, and to ensure that people get to hospitals in time for them to start treatment earlier, not hospitals, so to speak, but treatment early so that the infection does not progress. Then if the scientists could please explain the process that they would be using to ascertain the efficacy of the vaccinations against the new variant. Chair, that is my question. And I trust that we will get answers, Chair, without skipping them, especially the ones that has to do with therapeutics, especially the ones I'm talking about the department, and especially the ones in terms of the response of at the primary care level, ensuring that disease management, especially for those living with comorbidities, are under control. And I would appreciate to hear from the scientists in terms of the rest of my questions. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Sukers. Honourable Ismail, are you going to attempt to ask your questions yourself?
Yes, Chair. Thank you and good evening, everyone. And thank you once again for your presentation. Very well done. I just have a few clarity-seeking questions. My first question, although I've been covered by quite a few of my colleagues, but I just want to, maybe put it in a different way so that you can get the gist of the question that I'm asking. So will the current vaccines protect against this variant? And are we looking at possibly a totally different vaccine for this particular variant, especially it affecting children or the youth rather than adults more? My second question, can you advise on hospital preparedness, community preparedness, and if there are any programs or, workshops management of patients in communities so that, our communities out there are actually well-versed in what to expect and how what to look out for and how and, when to react when something or when they find them an adult or a child being sick. My third question is how many deaths are there so far due to this variant? I'm sorry if I'm asking questions that have already been asked or specified in the presentation, but I've been having connectivity problems. My fourth question, since vaccines were not first prioritized for children, have they been adversely affected now due to this variant affecting children quicker rather than adults? My fourth clarity or a statement I would like to say is I want to also specify that the constitutional rights of citizens of this country must always be prioritized. Everyone has a choice. We need to respect everyone's right to choice of either taking the vaccine or not. My sixth question, is there any logic to travel bans? The reason why I'm asking this is we know the president has specified, the stance of South Africa, but I'm looking at going forward, especially with the fourth wave. My seventh question, I also want to understand, we're promoting vaccines to reach herd immunity. However, we have found that the amount of booster shots will be most probably be increasing as these vaccines don't protect anyone from getting the COVID for that matter, whichever variant it is. We know that we're reaching herd immunity in order to ease the effect of the of COVID, and thus maybe a person getting COVID and not as badly affected as one that has not been vaccinated. So does this mean that it would be in the long run, as a department, do you look at it in the long run? We have the normal flu vaccines that are taken every year. Do you think we'll be reaching to that level when it comes to COVID? I've also been asked by quite a few residents, is it not strange that most people that are vaccinated rather than those that are not vaccinated are most affected by this virus, going forward? And the point of comorbidities, I just want to find out, whether youth or the children that have been affected now by the latest variant, Are these children that actually have comorbidities, or are they just natural, you know, any child for that matter? Just for us to have a better understanding, we know when it came to adults, you know, people with comorbidities were obviously more sensitive to COVID. And is it the same now with children with comorbidities? Thank you, Chair. I hope I'm, you know, I was heard.
You were heard very well. Thank you, Honourable Ismail. Honourable Gwahube, I skipped you. You're welcome to raise your questions or any concerns. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. I only have a couple of questions. As we know that the vaccine, while the efficacy against this particular variant has not been determined, we do know that vaccines are possibly the best way in which people could be insulated or inoculated against this virus. And so a lot of my questions are pertaining to the vaccine rollout and how that has been done. But the first question relates to the process that was spoken to by Dr. Groom about particularly how far or what is the process that is to be followed with regards to determining the efficacy of our current vaccines in the country. Because I think obviously that will determine as to what the next step is going to have to be. Because obviously if there is a concern that the variant is not responsible, or at least not our vaccines are not effective against the variant, then it presents a whole different set of circumstances. Then the second question is, what does the health system readiness look like? We know that part of the reason why the second wave was particularly devastating is because it also coexisted, or at least existed alongside the festive season. And that was also part of the reason why the health system was absolutely stretched. Now we know what we saw in the second wave. And while it's been said that we can't necessarily, while we can project, we can't necessarily determine how it will act, how the virus will behave. But I think it's a very important question, particularly to the Deputy Minister, around the readiness of the health system, particularly considering all that we've learned thus far. And then the other question, perhaps this can be directed to Dr. Crispo, the DG. Where are we with the supply of the vaccine, the doses that are available in the country? And we've noted the announcement today by the department that there will be additional shots available to people who are immunocompromised. But what is the strategy around particularly booster shots for healthcare workers? As we are now obviously getting to a phase where a lot of them would have had the vaccine under the Sisonke trial a long time ago. And so it would be useful to understand what the stance is around the booster shots, not just the additional doses. And then also, I mean, I think a lot of colleagues have also expressed a lot of concern around mandatory vaccination, but perhaps the Deputy Minister can give an update on what the conversations are and what we are looking at in terms of determining whether or not mandatory vaccination is something that we could possibly consider. Because we've seen how other countries, particularly the EU countries, how they're dealing with the concern. And so this is not something that's going to be easy. And perhaps the Deputy Minister can provide some update on that. And that is it from my side. Dr. Jacobs, thanks.
Thank you very much, honorable members. I would want to give another opportunity to anyone who has not indicated or has not raised any questions. You have an opportunity now before I will raise my questions. And if not, let me thank again the Deputy Minister and the department and our esteemed researchers and scientists. You know, there has been a request for a while that we should get the scientists to this portfolio committee to come and explain a number of issues with regards to this COVID infection. And the question I'm asking myself as you were doing your presentation is the following. What is it that the people of South Africa well, I would say most people of South Africa do not understand about this illness, about this COVID. What is it that makes people vaccine hesitant? And what is it that we may be not explaining well to the people of South Africa to move them towards becoming vaccinated? And I think that's the basic question tonight, because this is an opportunity where this is being broadcast on television, is being broadcast in many other platforms. And it's an opportunity to tell South Africa and South Africans and those within our borders what it is that they ought to be doing and why would they have to be doing that. Because one does note this challenge being raised of mandatory vaccination, the challenge raised earlier about vaccinating the youth, people over the age of 12 years of age. And as we had been going along, the first challenge was, well, why should we have vaccines? Now that we had vaccines, okay, so we have vaccines, why should we vaccinate the older people only? Now that we're vaccinating the older people only, why should we not be vaccinating the younger people? And so it's been going on and on and on. And it is a major challenge because I think that the message is getting lost here somewhere. And for myself, when I read your presentation, and I read your last slide that you called summary, your third bullet point, I was asking myself, how does one put here that people can become reinfected once they have been vaccinated, but that people could be prevented from having severe illness or even death? I'm talking about those who have been vaccinated. And then when you were doing your presentation, Dr. I just need to look your name again, Dr. Liddells, I think. When you were doing your presentation, it became very clear to me what you were actually saying in that slide. And you must excuse me for taking a bit of time, because I needed to understand this myself in order for all of us in South Africa to understand why it is important for us to be vaccinated, why it is important to apply the non-pharmaceutical prevention methods, why we should all be careful, and why we should be concerned about ourselves and our family members. And it basically comes down to what you said, that the new variant has the ability to sidestep the neutralizing antibodies. But then you also said that what we have, fortunately, is that there is a less effect on the other arms of the immune response, which is the T cells. And if this is a little bit scientific, I'm very sorry to those who are listening, but I think we just need to get a proper understanding of what does this really mean. And the important thing here is maybe for yourselves to explain that there are two responses when one becomes infected with anything. It's an antibody response and then a T cell response. But the T cell response is only brought about once you are already infected with something. In other words, your T cells cannot prevent you from getting an infection, but your antibodies can prevent you from developing an infection if you have been exposed to that organism, which of course causes the infection. Dr. Lascelles, yes, that's a correct thing. So, Dr. Lascelles, my question is here is, what is the key message here for the people of South Africa? What is it that you're really explaining in terms of the reason why our people should be in the queues to be vaccinated? And then, of course, this has a major impact on the African continent. This thing of vaccine nationalism, this thing of hoarding of vaccines by certain countries, and the non-availability of those vaccines to poorer countries. It is having a major impact on the health outcomes of the people of the African continent, on the health outcome of the people of South Africa, and of course, in return, it will have a major outcome on the health of people who are on the other continents. And they ought to be able to see this in the shorter view and also in the longer term view. And we're hoping that that message will really go out there. And then two more points which I want to raise. So the other question I was asking myself is, so what's the clinical picture of this illness now? And it'd be nice if at some stage we'd be able to be told that it does exactly as the beta and delta variants have done. So it starts with an upper respiratory tract infection, which then spreads to the lungs, and et cetera, et cetera. I don't know how much you know at this point in time of this particular clinical picture. But of course, the clinical picture will determine the outcomes for the patients, and it will also determine where the patients land up in the hospital or not. I've noted that you're saying there has been an increase in the number of admissions to hospital. And also the question is, so where are these patients admitted? Is this now just in the COVID ward? Is it high care? Is it ICU? How many patients do we have now? More in the ICU than what we had previously. And to speak to this point of vaccine being made mandatory, I think the reason why I'm talking so much about this is that there is this concern that there are still people who have a concern with being vaccinated or having other people being vaccinated in order for us to be able to get to this point of what was called herd immunity or population immunity, or it could also even be called sterilizing immunity, etc. We need to get to that point where our people do not become infected anymore. And we need to get to the point where the virus would be able to die out because people do not become infected. And as you had rightly said, it needs a host. And once the hosts, of course, are immune to it, then this number of mutations would also come to an end. I know I've said quite a lot now, and in that are many questions to yourself, and I'm hoping you'll be able to respond to all the questions of all of the members. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chairperson, and all the honorable members for the questions asked. The questions are very clear. They are separated into some of the questions that are to be answered by our officials, because they are checking on our readiness and our management as a department. Number two, there are specific questions that are to do with the science and the research and the clinical presentation, and I'm sure our researchers will actually assist with that. I will start by dealing with those questions that were actually checking our functioning as a government beyond just the department. Probably some of them that I'll start with those that were asked by Honorable Kwakhube. Honorable Kwakhube, you might have missed out that maybe the officials will confirm, when did we start with the booster for healthcare workers? But a decision was taken that even before the scientists were able to tell us our healthcare workers are now having a waning immunity, let us err on the side of giving them a booster. And I think we're on the third week of boosting them. We are saying this is a group of South Africans who were the first to get the jab. And therefore, if there's anybody who deserves a second jab or a booster, it's them. Secondly, we are where we are, but they have no choice. They actually have to continue looking after our patients, some of them COVID infected, and therefore to really take them out of the risk is something that is morally correct. And therefore they have started the jab, a booster, and therefore our officials maybe may come with the exact date and even numbers. And I've actually been seeing there's increasing numbers of, I was actually answering a question yesterday that out of about 395,000 South Africans who are healthcare workers, I think about only 301. So it's a very significant number of those 301,000 who took a first jab and are therefore going to go for the second one. You are actually asking us what more can we do, Honorable Kwakhube. We are doing, like, this weekend is another Vuma vaccine campaign where we are taking a vaccine closer to where people live, because we would like to actually assist and get to be with them. I would probably touch on the issues of mandatory vaccine, as you have asked, but also combining with what was asked by Honorable Van Staden. But let me start by saying, Honorable Fatel, I don't know how we can assist you in your disappointment about the minister not being here. We accepted the invitation from the department, from the portfolio committee for the 1st of December, notwithstanding that the 1st of December is a World AIDS Day and there's a government event taking place in the area I've defined. We would have actually, it would have been really unfair for the deputy president to be in Chikungu alone without the minister. So we are here as the eyes and ears of the minister. That part that disappoints you is something that we could not have avoided, because there's no way we could have asked the minister not to be there, to be there. Let me read on page, it answers some of these issues that one of them was raised by Honorable Van Staden. The statement released by the president on Sunday, on page 4 of the statement, reads the following. As individuals, as companies, and as government, we have a responsibility to ensure that all people in this country can work, travel, and socialize safely. We have therefore been undertaking engagements with social partners and other stakeholders on introducing measures that make vaccines a condition for access to workplaces, public events, public transport, and public establishments. This includes discussions that have been taking place at NEDLAC between government, labor, and business and community constituencies, where there's a broad agreement on the need for such measures. Honorable Van Staden, there is beginning to be a broad agreement elsewhere with regards to this matter, and therefore we can't ignore that part. There may as well be other people who feel very strongly differently from the way you do feel. And that is why that the president is saying the deputy president is going to lead this team, of interministerial committee on vaccine that will be chaired by deputy president, to then make recommendations after consultations to cabinet on a fair and a sustainable approach to vaccine mandates. Now, that is the issue here that will be considered. In fact, among other people, Honorable Van Staden, who are saying, I'm ready and available as a church leader to say, I want all my members to come back to church, and this is my responsibility to make sure that they are protected. So all 2,000, 4,000 will have to be vaccinated, and so that we get them protected. Someday, Honorable Van Staden, you will actually have to actually categorize it. Your right is that much superior to a collective right. And therefore, some of us are actually advised that a collective right becomes superior on an individual right. We will therefore not deny you to remain at home if you so wish, but it would be actually foolhardy to say you will force yourself into a taxi of 10 other people who are vaccinated if you refuse to vaccinate, but you want to travel with them to work. You probably then may find your space alone somewhere else, because while you would want to insist of your individual right to not to vaccinate, you must also be ready to protect the collective right of many other people than yourself. There's another point that was actually, that should not have come into the discussion on first attempt, because the Honorable, the President put it so well, and I wanted just to make reference to it, which is also on page 5. Page 5 of the very same statement. The president goes on to say, in taking the decision not to impose further restrictions at this stage, we consider the fact that when we encountered previous waves of infection, vaccines was not widely available and far fewer people were vaccinated. This is no longer the case. vaccines are available to anyone age 12 and above, free of charge, at thousands of sites across the country. Now, the president is saying, when we got the first and the second wave, we had nowhere else to lean on. Right now, we are saying, vaccinate, vaccinate, because now scientists are here telling us that we have, if you are vaccinated, you still will get COVID-19, but it will not be so severe to take you to hospital or maybe ICU or death. Therefore, you cannot equate, because at that time, it was not only South Africa that actually had applied lockdown, the whole world, because we have nowhere, we had those fears. The president is now giving you a rationale why it is not necessary to lock down, because we have a solace of a vaccine. And if we do use it, we will then go forward. DG, you will choose whether you start for departmental. You did give me a question to answer our readiness, but I think you'll do better if you do it yourself or some of the officials, oxygen readiness, the country readiness, hospital beds, and all that, and also therefore allow our scientists to add on their knowledge on what has been asked by the honorable members here. Thank you very much, DG.
Thank you very much, Honorable Deputy Minister. And with the indulgence of the Chair, as the Deputy Minister has categorized the questions, the way we will answer the questions, we will get our Chair of the IMT, Mr. Ravin Naidu, to do all the readiness work. And then thereafter, I will request the scientists to come in and answer all the scientific questions as put on by the Deputy Minister. Thereafter, I will get Dr. Crisp to come in and do the sweeping and clear everything that was not covered by the scientists, by Ravin. But we also have additional colleagues who have joined us. We've got Dr. Perry Krishnasamy, who's our Compensation Commissioner, responsible for occupational health and safety, but ensuring that our minors or ex-minors, they are taken care of. Then we've got Mr. Mbulelo Tabugo from our Research Monitoring and Evaluation Unit, who are also here. But I will leave that to Dr. Christ if he needs them through. But I'll request that we start with Ravin, and then we'll have Richard and Michelle will decide how they deal with all scientific questions. Then Dr. Christ will come in and sweep. Thank you very much. How about you, Ravin? Are you able to get through?
Yes, thank you, DG, and good evening. Good evening, Chairperson. Good evening, Deputy Minister, Senior Managers, and Honourable Members. In response to the question about the state of readiness of the National Department of Health, I would respond from the context of the National Department of Health and then in the going into the provincial departments. As we came off the third wave, the department towards the end of October, early November, embarked on a process of planning and preparing for a fourth wave and anticipating a fourth wave as was predicted by our scientists. We took much of the lessons that we learned from the third wave, as well as we didn't ignore the experiences of the first and the second wave, and we revised and edited and amended on key areas. And as you know, and you see as the results are here on the epi surveillance and the active work that has been done there, contact tracing and testing, the communications, hospital readiness, case management, port health, emergency medical services. Upon completion of that has been cascaded down to each province, and every province has embarked on the process of reviewing their fourth wave resurgence planning. And that includes continuous and daily monitoring by the provinces, as well as national, would provide a provision of support in terms of vigilance and in terms of the case numbers and following on from the epi data, et cetera. And having a very responsive provincial incident management team. And that's clearly visible by the work that's been done by KwaZulu-Natal, where we had an outbreak of at least 36 infections. Yesterday, we were notified as a result of the Belita rage, and through active engagement of the province, that event has been cancelled subsequently. In terms of oxygen concentration and the oxygen supply throughout the throughout the country, the lessons learned from, especially from the second wave, where we went into a crisis, especially in the Western Cape, much of the lessons from that has been gone into a proper oxygen plan with the hospital readiness team keeping a firm grip on monitoring the oxygen status. This is advised by dashboards, which are live dashboards with Afrox, Air Liquide, and the other service providers that are there. They constantly monitor the oxygen levels in all of the tanks throughout the country. And the moment we get below, we got to a point where it's below 50% oxygen tank capacity, there's a diversion of the trucks actively towards filling of the oxygen tanks. The supply of oxygen takes various routes. It's either increasing oxygen manufacture, oxygen increasing oxygen storages at facilities, or trucking in oxygen as you go. And in the third wave, there actually was not any crisis in any one facility in the country. And that practices will be taken into the spot there, monitoring closely on the oxygen. In terms of hospital readiness, that has been ongoing. Bed status, the bed is constant and on. Many of the facilities that we've had at the third wave, we did not have pressure, but did not exhaust our resources. Hospital that was medical services, we then transfer patients to hospitals or facilities that are less busy or have the capacity to do so. So in going forward, like me to expand on any other point.
Thank you very much, Ravin. I request Dr. Lessers to start, and then we'll have Michelle Krum and then Dr. Chris. Thank you very much, with the indulgence of the Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and DG. I will answer some of the key questions that I think I can answer, and then we'll pass over to Dr. Groom for some of the ones she's more equipped to deal with. One of the key questions from Honorable Van Staden was about how is the variant picked up by the PCR test? And I think here I just want to explain again that normally these variants we only pick up on the genome sequencing. So that's the more complicated process in these specialist labs where we using these specialized machines, we get the whole genetic code of the virus and we can determine that that's the Omicron variant as opposed to the Delta variant or the Beta variant. Because of where one of the mutations is in this Omicron variant, it flags on one of the PCR tests that we use. Now, we use lots of different types of PCR tests, and they all have different areas of the genetic code that they target, that they detect. And so it's one particular assay that we use in the NHLS for about 20% of the testing in the NHLS. And some of the private labs use a lot. Lancet Labs particularly use it a lot for their testing. And because of this mutation, you can see when you look at the test results, when the specialist scientist, the virologist looks at the result in the laboratory, they can see that the PCR test is detecting two of the genetic targets on the virus, and it's missing one of the others, the spike gene. And that essentially then acts as a proxy marker for this variant. Now, it's not conclusive because that marker can flag in other variants, particularly the alpha variant that was never a big problem here in South Africa, but was a problem in the UK and elsewhere. So you still need to do the genome sequencing to make sure that you're seeing the same thing and that it is this variant. But it's a proxy marker that allows you to track this variant kind of more quickly. It allows you to see without doing genome sequencing of all the samples, it allows you to get a sense of how quickly this variant is spreading into the different provinces and through the different provinces. So I hope that's explained it a little bit, that it's not definitive, but it's a proxy marker for this variant. There were a lot of questions from different honorable members about the clinical illness and the symptoms, and are they the same? And I know there's been a lot of kind of doctors in the media talking about what they've seen on the ground with the clinical symptoms. I think the key thing here is to understand that the clinical illness, the COVID, is dependent not just on the virus, but on you as the host and your immune system. And so although the virus is changing, what's also changing is our immunity. And a lot of us in the population have some immunity built up from either previous infection or from vaccination. And that will modify the clinical illness that we get if we get infected with the virus again and this new variant. So that's why we're just cautious about this kind of initial lots of talk about mild illness, because we would expect that, because most cases are anyway mild. The majority of cases in the younger age groups are mild. And if people are vaccinated or have had prior infection, then they're more likely to have a mild illness. The specific symptoms may differ a little bit, but they're not likely to be significantly different. This is still a respiratory virus that gives us symptoms of a respiratory virus illness, and that's fever, sore throat, headache, runny nose, and then if it progresses, then cough and shortness of breath. So that overall clinical picture is not going to change significantly, even though the genetic code of the virus is changing. Similarly, Honorable Wilson asked about the incubation period. We just don't know, does this variant have a different incubation period? It's very unlikely to be, again, significantly different. You'll be aware the average incubation period is about 5 days. And that means some people it's much shorter, it may be 2 or 3 days. Some people it's longer, up to 14 days, but on average, five or six days. There was a key question, again, Honorable Wilson, about do these variants emerge because of vaccines and because we're rolling out vaccines? And this is a really critical one to understand, because it's really the exact opposite. That these variants, unfortunately, will continue to emerge where we allow the high level of spread of this virus. So wherever we allow the virus to continue spreading, to continue infecting people, then unfortunately, we're going to see it continue to evolve. And if you remember, it's just evolving because this virus has to survive. That is the reason it's evolving. This virus doesn't really have to give rise to a different clinical illness, because the majority of spread of this virus happens just before or around the time that you get symptoms. And so what happens to the individual who's infected doesn't affect the survival of this virus. So it's purely evolving in a way that allows it to continue spreading. And what we're seeing now may be that it's continued to evolve so that it can still infect more people in the population who have some immunity to previous variants. And so because this variant can get around some of the immune defenses, it has a survival advantage. it can spread efficiently because it can infect people who have some protection and people who are unprotected. And the last one that I'll tackle and then I'll hand over to Dr. Groom is the chair's question of and Dr. Groom will probably also answer this one, but the reasons for the vaccine hesitancy and the understanding about the vaccines. I mean, clearly this is a critical one, and I think we all as scientists and doctors also take some blame for the fact that we maybe have not communicated well throughout about the vaccines. Here it's really critical to understand the different layers of protection that a vaccine will offer. And it's critical to understand that the vaccines are designed primarily to prevent severe disease. So they're designed to prevent you from getting very sick and from landing in hospital and from dying. Now, there was initial optimism early on when we saw the results of the first vaccine trials that actually they were also good at preventing milder illness, mild and moderate illness. And that initially gave us hope that would help to prevent infections and slow the spread of the virus. But what we've seen over time with this evolving virus and these new variants is that the virus has found ways to get around that protection, the protection against infection. And the virus is clearly getting better at that. It's found better ways to get around that layer of protection. But what we've seen so far is it hasn't found ways to get around that layer of protection against severe disease and against death. And that's absolutely critical. And that's what we must communicate. We must communicate that these vaccines are designed to do that job, to keep you out of hospital, to keep you from dying. And they do that well, even in the face of this changing virus. And most people, I think, don't really want to get very, very sick. They don't want to end up in hospital. They don't want to die. And the only way at the moment that we can give ourselves that protection against this virus is to get vaccinated. And it is as simple as that. So I will hand over to Dr. Groom, and then if there's any that I've specifically missed, the DG can point me back to those. Thanks,
Dr. Lessel. So I'll try and address. So let me start with the age distributions. So I know I did present a lot of information and sometimes difficult to distinguish. But I think most of the, when we're talking about the younger age groups, this tends to be those 10 and above. So it's kind of the high school going age. And this tends to be more congregated in the the high schoolers. And they tend to behave clinically more toward similarly to adults. So I think we see very, very little disease, severe disease in the very young. So those under 10 years of age, obviously there is a small proportion that is going to be picked up. I think it's also important to note that, you know, in terms of our case numbers, this is always going to be reflective of the testing that is done. People, you may be more likely to test, you know, if the adult is symptomatic and then, you know, children in the household get tested, they may come up as positive, but maybe really very mild illness or asymptomatic. So I think what we've seen in previous waves is that there is some infection in the younger kids, but this is a small proportion. And those with severe disease are mainly those who have underlying diseases. Sometimes you see a small increase in the very young, the under 2 years, in terms of hospitalizations. And I think this is mainly precautionary on the parts of pediatricians in terms of, you know, having a very low threshold for admitting. And we regularly, update and provide reports in terms of looking specifically at the pediatric population. And I think for many of these data and what I've presented, I really would also point you to the NICD website. We have, you know, we produce weekly and daily reports, which do give a lot of this information. And understandably, not everyone has time to read through these. But if you are, if you do want to, you know, these reports are publicly available and we do distribute these. Moving in onto the hospitalizations and ICU beds. So we have seen a small increase in the number of hospitalizations. I think this is at still very low levels. In terms of ICU beds, we do have some in ICU, but this hasn't increased as yet, and we will be monitoring that over the coming weeks. Once again, we do put out daily reports of the DATCOP data, which gives these, you know, the currently admitted, how many are in ICU, how many are ventilated. And so I think if you are interested in this, we put out a weekly report in terms of hospitalizations as well. So those data are available. I think it will be changing in the coming weeks. And so I think those are good resources if you would like to access those. I think just dealing with vaccine effectiveness. So the clinical trials, some of which were done in South Africa, measures vaccine efficacy. And then once the vaccine is introduced into the larger population, we're then able to assess how well the vaccine works now that it's given to a larger population of people. And so we do have, that is more a scientific and specifically designed study that one would conduct to get those data. And we have planned some of those assessments at NICD and at other institutions. We have a working group consisting of several scientists with experience in conducting these types of studies. And so there definitely is a plan in terms of assessing this. And we're working closely with the WHO and others in terms of these conducting these evaluations. I think that's, and definitely we would be able to look at, you know, potentially, you know, how effectiveness, you know, differs, you know, between Omicron and previous variants like Delta. Just trying to have a look. Just in terms of ending the pandemic, I think we really need to realize that this is a very new disease. And there's still a lot to learn. And I think, as Dr. Lessel said, we were really optimistic at the beginning that we could have a highly, you know, effective vaccine that would be able to get rid of the virus. We should have known, really, that respiratory viruses, we haven't managed to eradicate any respiratory viruses. We eradicated smallpox, very close to eradicating polio, but not any respiratory viruses. And I think it's probably unlikely that COVID will disappear entirely. But as more and more people are vaccinated and get natural immunity, there will be less transmission of the virus and less development of these, you know, mutations and variants that might, you know, lead to these increases in infections. But I think it really is, we know a lot more than we did at the start. We're definitely in a better position at this point in terms of having some protection. A large proportion of South Africa has been exposed, whether it's asymptomatically or mild disease and may never have tested. So our level of underlying immunity from natural infection is good. And studies are really showing that natural immunity does provide, you know, it does last for at least 6 months, probably longer. We have, you know, really increased the number of vaccinated. And so we would hope to be able to move vaccination into the younger age groups. I think the vaccination really has been targeted at those at highest risk of severe disease. So that is why we started in the older age groups and are moving down and offering this now to our teams. In the US, the vaccine has been used even down into very low age groups under 12 years. But I think this will be driven, you know, by the clinical pictures that we see. And at this stage, you know, a lot of asymptomatic disease in that age group. I think that does address herd immunity and just that, you know, it's difficult with the original plans, you know, for herd immunity is that, as we've seen these with the variants that have come up, it may not be as easily achievable. And then I think just to address the Honourable Chair's question about, you know, what we feel the public needs to know. And I think what's really been different about, you know, this pandemic is just the access to information and misinformation. And I think, you know, data is freely available, and that is what scientists are trying to put out. But I think on the flip side, it's sometimes difficult to interpret or maybe open to misinterpretation. And I think just, you know, it's actually up to every individual, you know, to be able to try and, you know, address to whatever extent that they are able, or to direct them to the relevant health professionals in terms of trying to counter some of this misinformation that is out there. Because I think the true vaccine hesitancy is probably a small proportion, and the rest are really, you know, fearful of the vaccines and fearful of what they've heard anecdotally, and not always able to interpret the data, you know, in the correct way. And I think the other thing is that, you know, we've never rolled out a vaccine, you know, to this proportion. I mean, we're vaccinating, you know, thousands of people every day. And I think, you know, that is different to, you know, our EPI schedules, and that where we, you know, vaccinating against diseases which are controlled. And my final point is really just, I think people have forgotten the role of vaccines. I think with the generations, I think the older generations, you know, really remember when polio, you know, there was no vaccine for polio, and how these were really deadly. And I think there's a perception that natural immunity is so much better. And I think a disregard for, you know, what that may mean. And I think, yeah, I think the information and providing the right information out there is really critical. And yeah, also, if I missed anything, then I'll Dr. Chris can point me to those. Over.
Thank you very much, Dr. Krum. Within that, the chair, we're just wrapping up. I'd request Dr. Chris just to cover whatever was not covered, and then we'll hand back to our Honorable Deputy Minister. Nicholas, over to you.
Thank you, DG. Thank you, Chair, Deputy Minister, Honourable Members of the House, colleagues, and members of the media. So I'll just try and respond to the few questions where I suppose some numbers are required. There was a question asked by the Honourable Geller about, is this only in the public sector? The answer is no. The disease is very much in the public and the private sector, equally so. And she asked the question about whether the vaccination target of the 12 to 17-year-olds was being achieved. So far, 477,000 adolescents between 12 and 17 have been vaccinated, and that is with Pfizer vaccine, which is the only vaccine we use, which is approved for use in this age. Honorable Van Staden asked, how long will we have to cope? The answer is, we don't know. It very much depends on us and how we behave, and how we respond to the measures that are needed to be put in place to control the virus. And that doesn't mean only us at an individual level. It means at country level, community level, country level, and globally. But we suspect it will be years that this vaccine, this virus will be with us. Honorable Temba Kwayo asked about the reaction from around the world. Well, I think the Deputy Minister did answer it. It's just safe to say that once the virus has spread to many communities, it doesn't really help to close the door after the virus is already in your community. It's better then to work together, and that's what we've been trying to say amongst ourselves in the science community. Honorable Sukas asked about supplies, the molnupiravir and the Paxlovid. The department is in discussions with the manufacturers, and in fact, one of the manufacturers to potentially manufacture inside South Africa. We are discussing those two and other matters with manufacturers so that we understand what it is that they are selling, what it does. There is an essential medicines committee called the NEMLAC, which assesses this and assesses the economic value of those medications, and we have done a numbers estimate with our colleagues in the provinces of volumes that we think we'd be able to use of those two medications. So we are working on it. Regarding the different the percentage of the population that we need to achieve herd immunity, and the question that was raised by a Honorable Sukas about the discovery comment about 80%. We've learned some time ago that herd immunity is elusive. And the reason for that has really been described by the scientists today and in previous meetings, that the variants change the ball game entirely. And you need to get ahead of the game very fast so that you don't get variants. You need to get 70, 80, and perhaps even 90% of the community vaccinated before the new variant. Otherwise, you go back again. It's a bit like playing snakes and ladders as a kid. You can never quite catch up if you don't get ahead of the game fast enough. Are the other programs neglected? They were to a point. Honorable Minister, Deputy Minister, and all the senior officials and in the provinces have been working very hard to play catch up. We recognize that we have not caught up with all of our programs, but we're quite pleased to see the upturn in particular in the HIV TB space, but also in parts of the other services that did get a bit neglected in the first year of the pandemic. Honorable Ismail asked about current vaccines and do they protect? Yes, I hope you're convinced, and I hope everybody who heard tonight is convinced. Vaccines protect us against severe illness. Even if they don't 100% protect against all illness, they certainly are showing us that they do protect against severe illness. We will likely get new vaccines and better vaccines because we know that laboratories and scientists are working on this all the time. We are prioritizing vaccination of everybody right now, particularly the older, and we have been introducing it right the way down to children age 12 and older. But we have been informed that we will not get an application for vaccinations for children below 12 until the new year. So once that happens, then we'll be able to introduce vaccination for children younger than the age of 12. The question about whether the children we're seeing have comorbidities. Even in adults, we don't really see the general comorbidities as being the issue. And I've been trying during the course of this week to follow up with a lot of hospitals and practitioners. It's age that has been the issue way more than comorbidities, but we do see people that have immunosuppressed conditions being vulnerable. So I guess those are comorbidities, but they're very specific comorbidities. And that's why we have that program running at the moment that's been running for a few days now, in particular stepping up to get people with immune suppressed conditions to get an additional dose, which answers the question from the Honorable Garube. So an additional dose is another dose in a short time period after the primary vaccination schedule. So we talk about a primary schedule for Johnson & Johnson is still one dose, and the primary schedule for Pfizer is two doses. And it's an additional dose is given pretty close after those. So 21 days after the end of the primary schedule, that's an additional dose. And it's for people whose immune response has been suppressed and they are not able to make the levels of immunity that the rest of us in society are able to make. That is different from a booster that's given 6 months later to just give your immunity a reminder about the exposure to this particular virus's protein. At the moment, the vaccines that we have are, vaccinated 25.78 million people, that's 16.6 million individuals, about 42% of adults have been vaccinated with at least one dose. And so far at the moment, we have 19.2 million doses of vaccine in the country, of which 15 million are held centrally, more or less half and half Johnson & Johnson and Pfizer. So at current utilization, which is remaining under 100, today we were well over 150,000 doses, but we have been trailing at under 150,000 doses a day. That is a long time before we'd be able to use all that vaccine. So it is true, we have been delaying the delivery of vaccines so that we do not hoard. We don't want to stockpile vaccines while others are trying to get them. And we don't want vaccines to sit here where we incur the risk and the vulnerability of having to deal with the expiry dates coming up. So when they're delivered later, the expiry dates are later. We have no vaccines that are under immediate threat of expiry in our central chain, but there are some in the periphery that need to be used quite quickly, otherwise they will expire. because they've already been thawed for some time. And we're trying to get those used, so we really encourage people to come forward now. Healthcare worker boosters started on the 8th of November. Up to this evening, we have done 164,904 doses of vaccine of Johnson & Johnson boosters to healthcare workers. So I think, DG and Honorable Chair, I've covered the remainder of the questions that I hadn't marked off when my colleagues were answering. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Chris. We'll hand over to our Honorable Deputy Minister. Thank you.
Thank you very much to the team. Chairperson, if there are any outstanding questions, we are ready to help again. But I think we have covered more or less all the questions that were posed by the members to us. Back to you, Honorable Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, DM, DG, DDG, Chris, Dr. Lessels, and Dr. Groove. We appreciate your fair and honest answers to all of these questions. I will be closing soon, but one of the members asked to just say something for 30 seconds, and then I will be wrapping up this meeting. Honorable Gwahube.
Thank you very much, Chair. I just wanted to say, look, I mean, I think it's quite important for the people in this meeting to understand that obviously as a portfolio committee, we have our very important oversight role on the executive, and we do that job on behalf of the people of South Africa. And so sometimes in the hurly-burly of these meetings, our appreciation for the world-class scientists that we have in the country can be lost. And so I think it's important that as members of parliament to express that we are grateful and thankful for the work that is being done behind the scenes. Many of the people that we never see, we never get to see, who do the work behind the scenes, but it's world renowned, and for that we are thankful, and we are wishing them strength in their arm as we navigate these choppy waters. But yeah, it makes us proud to know that we've got an arsenal of people who can do the work. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Gwahube, for those kind words. I think just before I am going to wrap up by giving a short summary, DM, or anyone on those kind words of Honorable Gwahube, I know it's very late.
We are extremely humbled by the comments that Honorable Gwahube is making. Now that I'm working closer with the department, I now know that actually a lot of these scientists are having their specific responsibilities in various research institutions, universities. What they do is over and above what they have there as their responsibility. So we appreciate this because as a department, really, it's a thank you and a thank you to them. We're not offering them any remuneration for the support that they give. They do it on behalf of the country, and we thank you there. Them very much. But if then we receive these accolades and they receive these comments from Honorable Gwahube and from portfolio committee members, it goes a long way to encouraging them to continue doing their best and supporting the country's processes. Thank you very much, Chair, for the opportunity.
Thank you very much. Honorable Sukers, I hope those are also accolades. I hope it's not a question, but I'm about to close. You're welcome.
I don't want to change the sweet atmosphere. I just want to say something. I think the lesson here, Chair, is that we need to let the experts do what they do. And we should not let the politicians drive the message when it comes to health. That is my comment. But I want to say that the question by Honorable Van Staden around the status of the task team as announced by the minister, by the president, has not been answered. I don't expect it to be answered because you are closing the meeting, but I just want to make that note. It is not a point of debate. It is an issue that needed to be answered within the context of the committee. This debate on mandatory vaccination needs to go to Parliament. So it's not a debate here. It is just to know what is the status currently. I just wanted to say that, and I want to join in saying that we are really proud of what we have as a nation, so that I bring the sweetness back, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Gwafube, for bringing so sweet you and Honorable Sukas. From my side, thank you very much once again. I think I'm just going to say a couple of sentences and then I'm going to adjourn the meeting. The bottom line is the following, fellow South Africans. The virus evolves in order to survive. It is the nature of being an organism, of course, then also the nature of being a virus. The end of this is only when the virus burns itself out, or when we've been able to defeat this virus and it not be able to infect other people. For how long is the question? It depends on how long we, on how well we behave and what our behavior is, and how do we get to do this to get the virus not to infect people anymore is to get ahead of the game. 70 to 80% of people should be vaccinated. And you would probably have noted I had taken some of the words of some of the people who had responded to our questions. So good night, everybody. Thank you very much for your time. And this meeting is then adjourned.
Good night, Chairperson, everybody.